This episode, Marvel Star Wars, issue number 45, cover dated March 1981. Hello, and welcome to Marvel Star Wars, From Empire to Jedi. We are a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. My name's the Irredeemable Shag, and I'm your host, but I'm not flying solo. Every single episode, we feature a different guest host. This episode, my co-host is a podcaster. He is a friend. He is a rebel with a sketchpad and a bounty hunter of bargain bins. He's the kind of guy who could out-haggle Watto at a Tatooine flea market. Folks, please help me welcome Mr. Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist. Welcome to the Rebel Base, Jared. How you doing, man? Thanks for being here.
Man, I am happy to be here. I am here on a special mission to infiltrate the Rebel Base, getting intelligence. And so far, so good. So far, so good. No, I'm happy to be here. This is like old home week for me. And we'll get more into that as the show goes on.
Absolutely. Now, I do think you're going to be in trouble if you're looking for intelligence in this particular base, because you just got me and that's not going to go well for you.
Well, we'll put something together.
Well, folks, this is exciting because this is the first post-Empire Strikes Back issue. So Marvel published the Empire adaptation for 6 issues, you know, all 6 months of that. Now, the interesting thing is that material was complete before they ever published the first issue. Because, you know, they did those super specials that had the whole thing. So it's 6 months, they were just basically doling out material that they had done. That means the Marvel editors had 6 months to plan for their first post-Empire original adventure. Today, we're going to see what they had in store for us and if that paid off. Now, we are covering Marvel Star Wars issue number 45. Across the cover, it says Star Wars Death Probe. And that is specifically why I offered this comic to you first, Jared, because I think this name has some meaning for you over on the Long Box Crusade. Is that right?
No.
Oh, okay. Great. Next, moving on.
Yes. My nom de pod over on Long Box Crusade is Death Probe. We all have an official nickname between Christatos, the Weasel Skull, Dark Web, and myself, Death Probe. And this harkens back to when we first started Long Box Crusade. Well, Pat started it, then I joined shortly thereafter.
I love that you say joined. Mm-hmm. I think what you mean is hostile takeover.
Well, he had me on as a guest, and we were doing this era of Star Wars issues, and I never left. But this is where we started podcasting together. You know, it was fun. You know, I reached out to him. I think I guessed it on something, and or it was a Star Wars. And he said, hey, maybe you want to do a few of these. So I ordered a little bundle of comics off of eBay, the little run that we were going to cover. This was in it. It's probably my, I don't know, third episode maybe of Long Box. We covered this one, and we were just talking about the cover, and it says Death Probe on there. And, you know, we were just riffing as we usually do. And I was like, it sounds like a great band name. I've been gone for Death Probe, you know, and somehow it stuck as my nickname. So, yeah, this comic, Star Wars 45, the cover, is where my official handle of Long Box comes from, gosh, 9 years ago.
I mean, that's, you and I became quote unquote friends 9 years ago. And that's when you started podcasting. So that sounds about right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. This was almost in a couple months. It'll be right around it'll be 9 years in just a couple months. So yeah, the Death Probe cover is a big one for me. The folks listening cannot see us, but behind me on my wall, I have the 11x17 print of the cover. I got it last year at Dragon Con because Mr. Lawrence Hama was there.
Oh.
And, you know, Larry's famous for writing, but he does some drawing and he's a good penciler. And I'm sure you'll get to it. But yeah, he's a cover guy on this one. And so I was just like, you literally are selling the death. Well, how obscure is this? Selling the Death Probe cover. Had a great conversation with the guy that day. There's much more to say, but we got to keep going with the show. But yeah, Death Probe, this cover is big for me. Hangs on the wall behind.
That's awesome. That's so cool. And I'm so glad that we got to have you on for this episode. That's fantastic.
I have a question, though. And forgive me. I don't know. You reached out to me about this. You told me about the project. Did you actually cover the adaptation of Empire? Is that like, is that where this podcast starts?
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. You know, when most people guest on a show, they might actually listen to an episode or two.
Yeah, for some people, yes. But yeah. No.
So, yeah, if you had bothered to pay attention, no. 2 months ago, because this is an every other month podcast, we covered the Empire Strikes Back adaptation. Me and Andy Leyland went through all six issues, had a fantastic discussion.
Sounds dumb.
About 30% of it was just bashing you specifically, but I mean, it's
30%.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
That's almost half.
Take your shoes off and try counting again. But anyway, so yes, of course we covered Empire Strikes Back, but that's where the show began, with an episode where me just talking about Star Wars and my love for it. Then we did Empire Strikes Back. And then unfortunately we got to this episode where you're the guest, which is clearly just circling the toilet bowl at the moment. We're going to see if we can pull out of this spin.
By the way, total setup. I listened to the episodes.
Sure. I bet.
I did. You talked about the lasers and the spaceships and the force.
You did listen.
The Han Solo. You talked about
the Han Solos.
Princess Leia.
Yeah.
I heard it all.
You did listen. I'm honored. I feel honored. Note to future guests, please at least listen to one episode before you come on the show.
I won't even listen to this one when it comes out, to be honest with you.
So far, it's not worth listening to. So, all right, folks, as we get into this, please remember in the comments, we are not experts. We are just passionate fans. So please go gentle on us when Jared gets something horribly wrong and I maybe get something slightly wrong.
Vulcan nerve pinch.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Well, folks, before we get too much further and embarrass ourselves even more, we need to take a second to thank our sponsors. This episode of Empire to Jedi is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Each episode will select a collected edition briefly discuss from the In Stock Trades library, and usually it's tied into Star Wars in some way, shape, or form. For me, on my pick, I finally got around to reading some modern Marvel Star Wars comics. And by modern, I mean comics that came out 10 years ago, but they're modern for me. So I started with the 2015 Star Wars and Darth Vader books, and dang, those are really good. I did not expect to enjoy, again, quote-unquote modern comics as much as I did. I tore through these things. They are fantastic. So I picked a collection from that era that I read. This is Star Wars Darth Vader Modern Era Epic Collection, Vader Down. Trade paperback. It's a really long name. Just remember Vader Down. It collects Darth Vader. This is from, the 2015. The Darth Vader series issues 13 through 25, so a whole bunch of the Darth Vader storyline. It collects Vader Down, which was a special, and then Star Wars 13 and 14, which crosses over into it. And let me tell you, folks, the Vader Down story was so freaking good. It brought everything together they'd been doing in the books at that time. You've got Darth, you got, all your Star Warriors. You've got those two killer robots, 000 and BT, which are awesome. You got Dr. Aphra. Anyway, it was phenomenal. Written by Kieran Gillen and Jason Aaron. Art by Salvador Dora LaRocca and Mike Diodato. So the art's phenomenal.
Ooh, that's a 1-2 punch.
It really is.
And, that's nice.
And if you just remember Mike Diodato from the 90s, folks, his art nowadays, or again, 10 years ago, looks so amazing on Star Wars. I mean, he is a fantastic artist for Star Wars. It is not the typical kind of cheesecake stuff we all knew from Wonder Woman, which, I mean, hey, that has a place. But his Star Wars work is excellent. Love this stuff. Cover art's by Mark Brooks. It's 416 pages. Now, it's not actually out yet. It's going to come out in November, so just a couple months away, November 25th. Normal retail price is about $50. Normally, these things are 38% off on in-stock trade, so you can probably get it for $30.99. So keep an eye on that. Again, Star Wars Darth Vader, Modern Epic Collection, Vader Down. Now, Jared, being that this is your first time on the show and you didn't bother to listen to a single damn thing, did you happen to bring an in-stock trades pick? Were you actually prepared?
Luckily for me, I've done your Justice League show and you use pretty much the exact same script layout. So
true. Correct.
I'm safe on that. But yeah, today's the day I learned that Mike Diodato did Wonder Woman. I always associated him with the Hulk.
Sure.
For some reason, I missed the Wonder Woman thing, which is weird because my wife collects.
That was the biker short era when Artemis was Wonder Woman and all that.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. So let's get to my in-stock trades recommendation. And much like yours, it has not come out yet. It's expected to really, well, maybe by the time the show comes, I don't know what your release plan is, but this book is supposed to hit shelves on October 1st.
Okay. So a little bit in your future, folks, if you're listening, okay, when the time this comes out.
Yes. I picked one of the gorgeous, wonderful, beautiful things that Skybound Via Image is doing. G.I. Joe, Real American Hero Compendium Trade Paperback Book 2, direct market exclusive Andy Kubert and Laura Martin cover. Is very much an homage to one of the yearbook covers from back in the day. Anyway, this is written by Larry Hama, which is why I picked it, because, he's involved in this Star Wars book today, with art by Rod Wiggum, Ron Wagner, Herb Trimpe, amongst others. This collects issues 51 through 78 of the OG G.I. Joe run, which is a double whammy for me because you know how I like to make sure the coins and coffers of my good friend John Beatty stay full. And he did a lot of the covers of this era. Him and Mike Zeck did a lot of the covers in this run. So pick one of these up, man. It also has G.I. Jerry, which is,
that's their cousin that was in the military.
You know, they're in the reserves. Anyway, it also has yearbook 2 through 4 and special missions 1 through 15. They're packing a lot in here. I was one of those guys that supported the compendium hardcover 4-volume. I've got all that. So now they're making it available apparently in a soft cover version. So this is gonna be bountiful, you guys. So for those of you who missed the super fancy version, you're gonna be able to get that content. So this is fantastic. I mean, Skybound and Image got together and it's everything Joe. I mean, if you get these compendiums, you're getting like everything: yearbooks, Order of Battle. I even think the Transformers crossover from Marvel's in there. Like,
oh, nice.
You get like everything. Anyway, this is volume 2. I leaned on 2 because I knew it had some stuff in there from my boy Beatty. But yes, as far as pricing, I don't see it on the site yet.
Yeah. So look for it in October, though. The price will be out there. Absolutely.
Something, something, something dollars, something, something 38% off of those dollars.
It looks phenomenal. G.I. Joe's never been a property that I connected with. I mean, I grew up watching a little bit of it, and I certainly have an appreciation for it. And even me, who didn't read the comics, look at that collection, and it looks really freaking cool. And with the amount of comics in there, it's got to be thick enough to stop a bullet, I would assume, as well. So you can take that on the mission because, you know, knowing is half the battle. The other half is having that, you know, watching your back so the red and blue lasers can't kill you.
You got it.
All right. For these and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit instocktrades.com. This episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support, because running the Fire and Water Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services, and a while back, we realized we need some help with the expenses. So we launched a Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. If you're enjoying shows like Marvel Star Wars From Empire to Jedi, the best way to support the show is by visiting our Patreon at patreon.com/FWPodcast. And while you're there, please consider supporting the Fire and Water Podcast Network. And in certain tiers, you get mentioned on your favorite shows. This episode, special thanks go out to Corellian Pirate Klaatu, David Barada Gutierrez, and Gord Nikto Tolton. Again, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FWPodcast.
Did you put the nicknames in there, or were they clever enough to set that up?
That's their birth names. That's their birth names, actually. Yeah.
Okay, no further questions.
Now, get out on the social media, or as I like to think of it, as the HoloNet, folks. Find us as Empire to Jedi. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or X, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Threads. Most importantly, leave your comments on our website, because that's where I pull your feedback that I read on the air. So you can go, again, it's fireandwaterpodcast.com/Empire to Jedi. Stay tuned after Jared and I get done covering this comic to hear your feedback from the last episode, because, again, it's always about building an online community of Star Wars fans around the show. Now, this is the part of the show where, quite frankly, things could fall apart, because I'm going to let Jared talk now. So, Jared Albrecht, the Art Sale Artist, my friend, a responsible podcaster of 9 years who's just not going to go off on some tangent that's going to take 45 minutes, would you please tell me your personal origin story with Star Wars, or and or your Star Wars comics, really, is what I'm looking for.
No.
Okay, great. Next question.
It's under 45 minutes.
That is true.
All right, well, Star Wars, I'll do it as quickly as I can. I was born in 1976, so Star Wars hit the next year. So I was just a wee baby. But so my point is, I've never known a world without Star Wars.
Mm.
I have an older brother, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, over on the Long Box Crusade Network podcast with me. I'm born into a world of Star Wars figures. There are figures from the moment I can have memories. And whenever your older brother's into something, you tend to think that thing is cool as well. So I totally got on board with Star Wars. And I can remember some of my first toys was more from the Empire era, because, you know, I was born in 76. So one of the first toys I remember getting was the Snowspeeder. Yeah. And I loved my Snowspeeder, and it was really cool. And Jason was jealous. Oh, I wish I was. But we were like the communists with our toys. We played all our Star Wars toys together. So yeah, like, I've never known a world without it. Another one of my earliest memories is the trading cards. Jason had a bunch of the trading cards, you know, the green border and the red border ones are the ones that I remember the most. And so it's like I said, I've never known a world without it. So that's my origin story with Star Wars. Now, of course, Jason, I think, picked up a few Star Wars comic books here and there. As I mentioned on several other podcasts, many of my own, when in my youth, I was just like, meh, about movie and TV property comics. So I was like, there's movies, there's the TV. I mean, we didn't have VCR back then, but you know what I'm saying? Like, to me, it was sort of a watered down version of the thing. Star Trek comics didn't appeal to me. Star Wars comics, Indiana Jones. Like, to say they didn't appeal to me, I'm not poo-pooing them. I was just like, if Jason bought them laying around, I'd read them. You know, and that's fine, and they're cool. But I just didn't gravitate toward them. That's a better way to put it.
Absolutely, because, I mean, I remember there was this trashy one called For Your Eyes Only that came out when we were kids, and that was just garbage.
You know who wrote it?
Actually, I don't. Who wrote it?
Larry Hama.
And I'm kidding. It's not garbage. I'm just trying to get Jared's.
No, that's all right.
I'm just trying to get his goat because he's a big James Bond guy.
You know, the funny thing is I did like adaptations better than expanded stuff.
Oh, because, okay.
You know, this was the early 80s and no one had VCRs and stuff yet. So that's how you kept in touch with the movies. That's how you quote unquote rewatched them. You either had a Viewmaster reel.
Right.
Or you had a comic book or maybe a novelization. But that's it. That's how you're keeping in touch with the movie. That's how you're quote unquote rewatching it.
Yep.
To this day, there's things that I get confused in my mind that aren't actually in some of these movies because they're in the comics, but I read them and now there's like, Temple of Doom is another great one that's got additional stuff and it's not in the anyway, no tangents. I got you. So I just dibble dabble in Star Wars and I don't really get serious about it until about 9 years ago when was like, hey, you want to read some Star Wars? And I ordered those books. And I was like, okay, yeah. So that's where I learned about Jaxxon.
Yep.
Which is maybe the greatest expanded character of all time.
The next question is, who's your favorite Star Wars expanded universe character and why? Is it Jaxxon?
Oh, let's roll into it. Certainly. Yeah, I got to go Jaxxon, and I'm still kicking myself for not picking him up when I saw his figure. Nice sort of Black Series figure.
I saw it.
At Ollie's, you know, on the markdown. I should have picked it up, but like, I like him due to his absolute ridiculousness. And I like that because I like the idea behind the fact that the Marvel folks are given this license and they got some guidelines, you know, from Lucas about what not touch and what to leave alone, all that stuff. So they had to guess, especially after the first movie, they had one movie to go on. They had to like guess at how to expand this whole thing. And we went through this as I'm going through my Indiana Jones Chronicles. There's a certain period where they had one movie to go from and they had to guess. Mm-hmm. But it's a heck of a lot easier to guess in the world of Indiana Jones than it is in Star Wars. So yeah, you get Jaxxon, the giant green rabbit creature who just in retrospect just doesn't feel like he belongs at all, but yet has this charm to him. So yeah, Jaxxon's my guy.
He took a wrong turn at Albuquerque and ended up in the Star Wars universe is what happened there.
He did. He really did. But I just love that concept. Just a bunch of writers sitting around going, okay, got this one movie. Let's build a universe.
Right. I know. Guys, I mean, like you said, Indiana Jones based in the real world, at least. So So Jaxxon is beloved by a lot of folks. So Abs, I'm glad you picked that one. That's fantastic. So awesome.
Yeah. He probably is going to come up a lot in here.
I think it really depends on the era you read.
You know what? Aside from maybe Blip, isn't there a guy named Blip?
Pliff.
Yeah. Aside from Pliff, I can't even think of another expanded universe character.
Well, it doesn't have to be from the comics. It could be from the video games or the novels holiday special or.
Yeah. There it says it right there in the script.
It sure does. The Star Tours ride. You know, you could have picked that Pee Wee Herman robot from the Star Tours ride if you wanted. You know, whatever, man. But Jaxxon's your guy. There we go.
Jaxxon, certainly. Yeah. Although. There's a dude in this book that I think is kind of cool that I don't know if they ever use him again, but we'll get to it.
If he's the dude I think he is, then no, he's dead. But here we go.
He did die. Oh, yeah, he did die at the end. I remember now. Oh, sorry, I read this a few weeks ago. It's all coming back to me now. At least I read it.
At some point in your life, true. Okay.
And you told me, I try. I really did.
Folks, please do not use this episode as a template for how you should prepare for the show. All right, let's get into this. So it is Marvel Star Wars issue number 45, cover dated March 1981, on the shelves December 23rd, 1980. Heck of a Christmas present. I wonder how many kids ended up with this in their stocking. Cover price, 50 cents, two shiny quarters. Cover is by the aforementioned Larry Hama and Al Milgrom. Why don't you describe the cover for us, Jared?
Nah.
Yes.
No, thank you. Okay. I like this. December 23rd is its on shelf date. Did you say it's in your stock? That's like someone's doing some late shopping.
Yes.
Right there. But anyway, let's talk about this cover near and dear to my heart. So the Marvel Comics Group banner is blue with white letters in the top left corner box. You have C-3PO and R2-D2 hanging out as they do on a lot of these in this era. The Star Wars font and logo is classic. The letters are white. The background is blue. The main action features the Death Probe itself. If you're familiar with the probe bot from Empire Strikes Back, you'll be familiar with what a probe looks like, but this one is being very aggressive and it's blasting some laser beams, and Luke Skywalker is like, oh no, as he almost gets blasted by a laser beam in his stark white outfit. And like I said, it says Death Probe.
I do wonder if that's Luke. It could be Luke or... or it could be a young man who is in this. You're going to hear more about Rad Torlint later. Could also be Rad, who is the first person to face this drug. The thing I love about this cover is just the bright colors. There are so much color. You got oranges and, as you said, light blues, dark blues, acid greens, yellows and reds and pinks. It's just so colorful. I love it. I love it. I love it. I think the blue around the Star Wars logo really makes it pop. Now, I don't know what to call these, but in Empire and in Star Wars as well, there were these lights. They were basically shaped like a capsule. Like, and here they're orange. Like, I don't know what to call those lights. It's a light feature in Star Wars. You all, if I showed it to you, you'd all would know exactly what I'm talking about. You see Darth Vader standing in front of them. They're just these long vertical lights that look like capsules. But either way, here they've used them to great effect. They put them all the way across the top. They're bright orange, and they accent the top sort of like speed lines. They give the cover a sense of action that's not actually there. It's a nice trick. It's really well done. Now, what do you think of that probe droid? Like, compare in your mind the probe droid from Empire Strikes Back to what you're seeing here.
I like this one. It feels meatier, like bulkier, which makes sense in terms of the story and what it's there for. It's much more of a combat version. It's like the one we saw in the film feels like, leaning on my military experience here, feels like a reconnaissance droid, where this is like a armored tank droid, if you will. So I think it's captured really well and given its own unique flavor, as it will have in the story. I think Larry did a great job. I mean, he's not famous for being an artist, first of all. He's famous for being a writer, but he is a good artist. And on top of that, he's not really famous for drawing robots. You know, he's much more of a, you know, I know him from all the Joe sketches and stuff he does at cons, but yeah, I like it.
Well, it might be fair to say in 1980, he wasn't famous for anything, really. I mean, at this point, he was probably still breaking in the business as an artist, I would think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. G.I. Joe doesn't hit until 82.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I think he's fooling around on this and digging deep into my memory banks, and feel free, listeners, to write in. I want to say he was working on Power Man and Iron Fist?
Iron Fist? Okay, that'd be nice.
Don't quote me, but here
we
are.
You heard it here first. Jared swore on a stack of Bibles. There it was. I heard it. The probe droid, I love that when he's blasting, his blast, like, almost, the explosions are almost digitized, or maybe they're supposed to be electricity, I'm not sure, but it's a cool effect. Altogether, I just love the way he laid it. I think the layout is phenomenal.
I agree. I think, like you said, the cover has more energy than it has a right to, and I even like how they worked in their little signature block into the panels in the background. I always like it when signature block gets worked into the piece. So, yeah, with our buddy Lawrence and $10 Al.
Well, $10 Al is also the co-creator of Firestorm, so he's got a big place in my heart as well. And you mentioned the corner box. Yes, we got our C-3PO and R2-D2 drawn by Al Williamson and Carlos Garzon, and that will stay the mainstay of the corner box for a long time, and I love it.
Yeah, I don't think it. Yeah, you know better than me, but I was thinking, I don't know that it changes until after Jedi.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, when I think Marvel Star Wars, like, that corner box is what stands out, so.
Yeah.
All right, let's get inside. Writer is Archie Goodwin. Penciler is Carmine Infantino. Inkers are Gene Day and Chris Stone. Letter is John Costanza. Colorist is Glynis Wien. Editor is Louise Jones, who will later on become Louise Simonson. Editor-in-chief is Jim Shooter. Pour one out for Jim. Sorry, he's gone. All right. The issue itself is called Death Probe, a.k.a. Jared Albrecht. Says it right here in the Marvel comic. All right, so I'm going to give a quick recap, and then we're just going to kind of go through it in blocks through the issue itself. So, a damaged rebel blockade runner limps away, presumably from the Battle of Hoth, desperate to rendezvous with the rebel fleet. But its escape is cut short when a deadly Imperial probe droid boards the vessel. This isn't a standard recon unit. It's been enhanced, hijacking the ship and plotting a suicide run straight into the heart of the rebel fleet. By chance, Luke Skywalker comes upon the rogue vessel, but his X-Wing is blasted apart. Luke and R2-D2 eject just in time and board the blockade runner, kicking off a tense, high-stakes battle aboard the drifting ship. Luke plays Saboteur, racing to stop the droid's mission. Realizing its adversary is Skywalker himself, the enhanced probe droid shifts tactics under Vader's orders, attempting to capture him alive. But the plan backfires as the blockade runner charges to critical mass, then collides with and detonates an Imperial Star Destroyer, destroying both the monstrous droid and the very admiral who created it. While Luke and R2 escape to fight another day. Well, that's it, folks. Thanks for coming. Everybody have a nice day. Stay tuned for the feedback. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of tackle this in chunks. I kind of broke it down into five different sections. So pages 1 through 4. So again, it's got the Rebel blockade runner flying through space. It's been damaged. The probe just smashes through there. And I got to right out of the gate, I got to talk about this 2-page spread. The probe droid, which is massive. This is not your standard probe size that we saw in the movie, or even the one that Hama drew on the cover. This thing's huge. And it is blowing apart, slaughtering people with all kinds of crazy colors. What do you think of this?
Well, this is going to be a theme throughout all the pages. And when you read the creators, I had to take note that there was indeed two inkers. There is so much tech in here. Okay. And let me tell you, as a guy who has inked a comic or two, the most pain in the butt thing to ink is tech, by far. You've got to get out all your templates and your rulers and the this and the that's, because you have to be very, very clean and sharp and straight lines. You know, you can't fudge with it like you can clothing or rocks or whatever. And when I was reading through this, I was like, this inker is just... When these pages in his desk, he's probably like, "You have a bleep button? Do you bleep on the show?"
No, we keep it kind of PG-13 if we can.
All right, he was like, "Gosh dang it!" Because this is a lot of. I mean, from page one with the cruiser, there's a ton of tech, and then like you said, the double page 2-3. That's so much energy going on, tons of tech. Rolling into 4, again, tech in every background. They're not skimping on backgrounds, but that's from the art point of view. From the story point of view, they just jump right in. They just jump right in like, hey, here's a cruiser, presumably leaving from Hoth. Here's a great concept of how to expand on the probe from Empire. Let's get to it.
There we go. I love the colors they chose, too. Like, you've got all these pinks and light blues that, like, clearly wouldn't have been there in the movie, right? But they're here to, because comics need a little more dynamic sort of coloring and stuff. I absolutely love that they're there. I think it's super fun. So I gotta ask you, since we're talking about the probe droid here, are you the kind of guy who says probe droid? Or are you the kind of guy who says probot? Because both are used in this issue.
Probe droid.
Probe droid. Okay. Thanks for asking. When I was young, I always used the term probot, because that, you mentioned the trading cards, right? You mentioned the trading cards earlier. I had those Empire trading cards, and that's how I relived the movie. And the probe droid is always referred to as a probot in the trading cards. So eventually, after watching the movie enough times on DVD or VHS or every other platform I've ever bought it on, I've come around to probe droid, but definitely a probot guy for a long time.
Better being an antibot guy.
Or antibiotic. I mean, you know, those are important too. So, all right. I love the suggestion that the Rebel Blockade Runner is damaged from the Battle of Hoth. That is a great, as you said, note to pick up. Wonderful. I do wonder about the size of the probe droid here. So I had an idea. So Carmen Infantino, folks, love him or hate him. You know, he obviously had a long run on early Star Wars books. He's come back for this issue. This may come as a shock. You might want to sit down. He is not known for drawing the most screen accurate tech stuff from Star Wars. I know. You may not think I'm making any kind of sense, but here we get a probe droid that is crazy big. So I wonder, did Archie Goodwin, you know, put that in the script, or were they working Marvel style? And he gets back the art and he's like, what in the hell did Carmine draw? I got to explain this in the script or something. I don't know.
I couldn't tell you, but if it's option B, then that's a very happy accident. I think one of the things that makes this stand out is expanding upon what the Empire can do with droids.
Yeah.
You know, and probe droids specifically. Or some people call them probe bots. Well, one guy I know calls them probe bots. So, you know, you're right, though. I remember that being on the card.
Yeah, absolutely is. It's on a bunch of the cards.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. But yeah. And is this in the first 4 pages? I think we meet Rad, don't we? Yeah,
we do. So, yeah, Rad Torlent, ship junior officer. They say he joined the rebellion when the Empire seized his home planet of Neutra 4. So is this your guy? Is this your guy?
No.
Oh, okay.
but I love his name. Like, to me, it was weird that they kind of built this character up a little bit. Like, this is Rad Torlent, Neutra 4. And you're like, oh, okay. What are we going to do with
I love that he knows it's a losing battle. First of all, by the way, I looked it up. The crew complement of a blockade runner is 125 to 250 people. And the probot slaughters all of them in like the first 4 pages.
Oh, yeah. It's doing its job.
And Rad is one of the last ones alive. And he's like, I have got to notify the rebellion. I've got to save the fleet. He knows his life's in danger. This is how awesome Rad is. I mean, every other minor character from Star Wars gets their own like miniseries or chapter in some novel. Rad needs his own miniseries. I'm telling you. We need to know his backstory. Anyway, and he doesn't just die. The probot actually grabs him and smashes his face into a wall. I mean, it is a brutal death for poor Rad. And then, like, the script even, you know, Archie Goodwin decided to even go along in the word bubbles to make it even worse. He's like, he's a victim in a long war, and he would have been a hero, except he failed. So, ouch.
Yeah, nice backstory.
Yeah.
And a cool name, Rad Torlin.
Exactly. So then we move on to pages 5 through 9 here, and we start with Admiral Damon Krell. Is this your guy?
He's my guy, yeah.
Okay, all right. You tell me about why he's your guy, and then I got questions for you.
He kind of reminds me of a Bond villain almost. Like, he's an extra layer of evil in the Empire. Like, because when we think about the Empire, what, we got Darth Vader,
yep, right?
The Emperor, and then, like, Tarkin,
yep,
from the first one. And yep, that's kind of it. This guy kind of adds to that rogues gallery of Star Wars. He's got this scar.
Yes.
I think the scar is what sells it. And he also has that great name as well. He's no Rad Torlant, but, like, Admiral Krell. It's very, you know, Star Warsy bad guy. So, yeah, they're 2 for 2 for making, like, kind of neat little names and neat little quirks. In this guy's case, it's the scar that I really like. It's very James Bond.
I would agree. All right, so they introduce Admiral Damon Krell, and the deal here is he has taken the probe droids and, under his orders, souped them up. So this probe droid, this death probe that they're battling, is his project, right? So I have to ask you, Jared, first off, you served in the military, and I want to say thanks for your service, but I also want to say, or ask you, I should say, as a military guy, how likely is it that an admiral could exceed orders, tamper with resources without permission from above, remodel weapons of war to his liking, and then deploy said resources for his own missions without getting caught?
I feel like Generals MacArthur and Patton did all those things that you just mentioned.
Okay.
Here's an interesting thing. I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but a lot of Star Wars from Lucas is World War II stuff.
Okay.
And in fact, one of the great things about Star Wars, I think it's lost after the original trilogy. And now you and your listeners are going to never be able to not notice this.
Uh-oh.
The TIE fighter and X-Wing, the dog fights, the space, yeah, dog fights between the aircraft, all that was based on real World War II dogfight footage.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's in all the documentaries. They show it.
Yeah, yeah. But they don't do that in, like, later movies. They do, like, it would be cool if it looked like this. So there's a certain amount of authenticity, whether you know it or not, consciously or subconsciously, that disappears. But yeah, so I think we're, once again, if we lean on World War II lore, where generals and admirals were given a lot more leeway and I mean, yeah, if this dude is an admiral, and assuming their chain of command works the same way it does here, like, if you're a high enough ranking, let's say you're a 4-star admiral in the Navy,
mm-hmm,
there's, like, nobody that outranks you short of the president of the United States.
Okay.
Like, you have, like, a chairman of the Joint Chiefs or whatever, but, like, you can kind of do a lot of things you want to do, you know, and the president doesn't get involved in day-to-day military ops. So, like, the military is run by generals and admirals. Really, it is.
All right.
Especially if you put a World War II filter on this. There's this bit of authenticity here.
I don't even want to know what admirals are out there doing with drones now at this point, then, secretly, without telling anyone.
Yeah, it blows my mind. But I'm always fascinated when it comes to military technology. Like, once the public finds out about, well, once they found out about the U-2,
mm-hmm,
you know, stealth aircraft of the, yeah, 60s and 50s, they were already flying the SR-71.
Right.
Once we found out about the SR-71, the F-117 was already being flown. Once the F-117 is in that, there's always something cooler and better that we don't know about 179. So you're absolutely right. What's going on out there?
Well, that's probably a smart thing, because we don't want our enemies to know that, you know, X-Men are flying the SR-71.
It's fascinating stuff. It's Area 51 type stuff.
There you go. Yeah.
It really is.
All right. So moving on. So in this little section here, so what we get the Admiral. They get the introduction there. We get Luke, who's flying along, and we get a nice little flashback of the Empire, mm-hmm, Strikes Back. We, yes, get Yoda and Vader and the whole secret about Luke's father and the rescue by the Falcon, the Bionic Hand, the whole thing. We get a good recap there. Now, one thing I want to note about this is, last episode, not that Jared would know, Andy and I noted in the comic that they never actually showed the lightsaber cutting open the Tauntaun, never showed the lightsaber cutting off Luke's hand. It would always happen sort of off-panel. And it happens here again. For whatever reason, Vader cutting off Luke's hand is hidden by these pylons. And yet later we see Luke with a stub, right? He's handless. So I guess it's a weird comics code thing where they just won't show the lightsaber cutting things off. I don't know. It's really strange.
It is odd. I never noticed that. I probably should have listened to those podcasts. But my favorite thing about this recap page,
yeah,
is Darth Vader might very well be his father. Notice, yes, the lack of commitment. They were like, because at the end of part 2, you were still like, what? Is he really?
Right.
Like, it was not cemented yet.
Yes.
And so that I love the phrasing of that on this page. And although we have a few pages to talk about remaining in this next block of four, this one's really fantastic. Like, this would be a great original page to have to hang on your wall because it's such a great recap page of Luke from Empire.
It's beautiful.
And the art is so good. And look at all the template ink lines that these poor guys had to do. Like, give them a break.
Well, this page, which is page 6 and page 7, both. One thing I love is when somebody comes in and inks Carmine Infantino with a thick line. I really like the thick line on Carmine. I think it looks better because he draws stuff crazy. And the thick line just gives it a little more chunkiness. Like the platform on Bespin Vader standing on looks really chunky. Then you go to the next page where Luke's in the cockpit. And there's a nice, really thick line on his helmet and his suit. And everything just looks chunkier. And I just think it makes Carmine's lines look better, especially with how stylized Carmine was getting by 1980.
Yeah, I love it too. And now again, I'm going to have to bring up Indiana Jones, the Comics Crusade and Longbox Crusade Network. You should all check that out. But I think we talked about this when you were on my show, which will actually come out after the show because of how in advance I record things. But the point is, you just read the Empire adaptation where they had, much like the Indiana Jones adaptations, likeness rights.
Yes.
So people look like people. Now, every time you get away from that, be it Indiana Jones or Star Wars, I don't think they do anymore.
So
I applaud these guys like Carmine and Infantino who are sort of building the universe with pieces that already exist, but they can't use all those pieces, so they have to make creative choices. And I love it. Apparently, there's some people who are not in the Camp Carmine, but I am all the way in, buddy.
I'm 1 foot in, 1 foot out is where I live with the Carmine thing. Now, I will say about the likenesses, like the Luke likeness by Carmine's never really done a lot for me, but I know a lot of people, that's what Luke looks like to them, and that's fine. For me, though, the Han Solo throughout this entire book, especially when you get to like Simonson and Palmer inking and drawing here, Han Solo, to me, looks like the Han Solo in these comics. It doesn't look like Harrison Ford, but by golly, when I look at that dude, that's Han Solo.
Let me tell you something. You know me. I have made a career out of drawing characters from the books on the books, right? I do book page sketches. Yeah. I draw Star Wars characters on pages from Star Wars books, and I sell them, and I put money in my pocket.
Yes.
Right? And I use the heck out of reference photos. I want them to look as much like as possible. Everything's a reference photo. I'm not a clever artist. I know. That's fine. Having said that, let me tell you something. The single hardest image of someone's face I've ever had to capture is Mark Hamill.
Really?
I have probably drawn 10 Mark Hamills, and I have one that I offer a print of because I can tolerate it. I cannot nail his face, which makes me wonder, because he has a very odd, especially after his accident, he has a very odd face in general. Like, it's just something about it doesn't lay right when I try to draw. And it was through that experience that I started wondering about these Star Wars artists outside of the adaptations. Like, they were experiencing what I was experiencing. Like, he is just so hard to capture.
Well, think about Al Williamson. His was all photo reference. So yeah, he was in the same boat as you. He had the likeness rights, and that would have been hard.
And yeah, even when I look at his work, I'm always like, that's pretty good. But like, really look at his Mark Hamill. Like, he's probably maybe the best. And still you'll be like, I don't know if that feels right. Like, and I don't know. I'm not saying it's the artist's fault. Just one of the hardest likenesses to capture. Just a little, maybe too much inside. Just thought I'd let you
know. You could do a whole series of book pages using the Star Wars comic likenesses. So you could draw them the way Carmine drew them.
Carmine did it. Yeah.
People would eat that up. They'd love it.
I'd use that panel with the chunky helmet. I'd use that panel all day. I'd use that as a reference all day. I'd swipe it all day long.
There you go. Awesome. So moving forward a little bit, Luke's X-Wing gets destroyed, right? The probe droid has blasted his X-Wing out of the sky, and Luke is just floating in space with very little protection from the vacuum. And here's a really cool thing. He and R2 are being thrust further apart from each other, so Luke uses the Force and draws R2 to him. Now, for those of us who've been following Star Wars stuff for 40 years, it's like, okay, what's the big deal? The big deal here, folks, is that Luke just learned how to use telekinesis, or whatever you want to call it, Force moving things in your mind, just learned that in Empire. And this is the next story. So this is, Archie Goodwin digging into the new toys, right, from Empire and putting them to use right away. And I love that.
Oh, absolutely. It was very fascinating to see what happens to a pilot that punches out, and they didn't do a ton with it, which was interesting. Like, they didn't, Green Lantern going through space with a green outline. Like, there's none of that involved. It's basically like, hey, these suits are are good for it for a short period of time, you know, okay. I can't refute that. Sure. You know, it closes with the mask and the little breather comes on, and apparently it seals everything. And yeah, the art in here is, again, fantastic. And again, the colors are great. I mean, they're really leaning on that. The orange suit always looked good. That's one of the best
things
in Star Wars. And then they highlight it with the blues, and orange and blue always goes together. War Eagle. So yeah.
Oh my gosh. I did not see that coming. Now, he does use his blaster pistol to propel him and R2, which I don't think works since it's just light, but there's no real propellant.
Well, is there force to it? I mean, no pun intended, but like in space, you know, if you fire a gun in space, you're going to get, it's going to move both objects equally as much. So I don't know.
I just, that fires a projectile. There's actually an explosion here. Yeah, this is just a laser.
Is it? So. Is there energy being pushed out? That's, we need to hear from the listeners on that.
Yeah.
We got to let them weigh in on that.
Put your science hats on, folks. If you're in space and you fire a Star Wars blaster, would it move you? So we need to know. So then Luke and R2 make their way to the Rebel blockade runner. R2 magnetizes to the ship, which is great. Luke whips out his lightsaber and cuts open the door the wall to get into the ship. Jared, what's wrong with that moment?
Nothing. Is it the color of the lightsaber that bothers you?
No. It's the lightsaber that bothers me. Because 10 minutes ago, he got his hand cut off and lost his lightsaber. As far as I know, it's sitting at the bottom of Bespin, or maybe it's in, you know, that box in Force Awakens. I don't know, whatever. It ain't in his pocket.
He probably did have to Amazon Prime overnight himself a new lightsaber. yeah, that's an excellent point. He's got he came from Dagobah at this point, right? They've left Dagobah, right?
Well, yeah. Well, did you not see Empire Strikes Back?
I did.
Okay, like they go to Dagobah, he goes to Bespin, he gets his hand.
This is the next thing.
He gets his hand cut off. The thing, okay. Even this episode.
Okay, that fire that does kill that theory, because I was like, well, maybe Yoda hooked him up with one, but you're right. He lost that one after he left Dagobah. Yeah. Nope. Can't fix that.
This issue starts with, like, it says Luke's even testing himself after the consequences of Empire. And again,
like, these were movies?
Well, the comics. We didn't say the comics, yeah. and not that they know, but Maz Kanata is going to end up with that lightsaber, so I don't know where this one came from. So
that totally blew by me. This is the second podcast going back 9 years covering this. Didn't occur to me, and Pat. Didn't occur to me until just now. I'm like, well, as Dr. Evil would say. If you can bleep that if you need to.
You just got to, that's the trick, is you got to put this in your perspective of thinking that this is, you know, 1980, what's going on at the time, which is like, I wouldn't have thought anything about Luke using the Force to move R2 either.
I thought it was odd that it was yellow, but the whole time it was like, he shouldn't have a lightsaber, let alone a yellow one.
All right, so moving on here, we get into pages 10 through 14. This is Jared's favorite part of the issue here. This is where Luke and R2 just run around in corridors.
They try to F things up for the probe droid every chance they get, and it's fun though. It's he says it's my favorite part, and jokingly, because, you know, peek behind the scenes, you know, on other episodes you'll hear him split up story descriptions with the guests, and I was like, this is like a one beat story. It's like they get on the ship, they stop the probe, and that's about it, really. And how they got all these pages out of, I don't know, but they did. And yeah, I mean, this could have been trimmed down a little bit, but I gotta say, you know what carries all this?
What?
Infantino art and these inks, man. All this tech is just really fun to look at. So you kind of get a couple of pages of him basically Ethan hunting around with the Mission Impossible theme, you know, like, because you look at it from his point of view, he was just flying along, got blown up. He doesn't know why.
Yep.
He gets on every system inside this personless ship where there's no people or there's dead people.
Yeah.
Everything. It's like a horror film. It's like a haunted house horror film in space, which I think is great. So on one hand, I'm like, yeah, we could trim that down. But on the other hand, if that was the concept for this issue, the art carries it, and it's a kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, it's fun. It's he's crawling through conduits. He's battling cargo forklifts. Which is one of the great Carmen drawings, because it's this ridiculous load lifter that just looks menacing, right? Like, why would you make a forklift look evil with giant spiky hands? He's dodging explosive barrels. He's breaking through locked bulkheads. It feels like a video game, like going from trap to trap to trap to trap is what it feels like. And that's fine. It's fun. Now, I don't know if you noticed, there is a moment here where Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker takes a page out of Harrison Ford's Indiana Jones, and he rolls under a giant closing door at the last second. He literally tumbles through the door as it's closing, and just made me think of your beloved Indiana Jones.
Absolutely. Before that, he does use the blue lightsaber that he has. Clearly. On that particular page, I wanted to point out, we've talked a lot about pencils and inks, and man, again, I can't say enough about the inkers on this, but Glennis, my girl Glennis, comes through. This page looks great. Like you said, sort of pinks and light green, mint greens and blues, because you get the intense, bright, hardcore coloring when this action, and this is almost the respite moment. He's not resting yet, but he's sort of out of the big battle with the carry. He's just escaping the room, and you get the smoke post-battle, and everything looks great. It looks great.
Oh, it's wonderful. And now, again, because I'm being a pedantic fanboy, I do have to point out R2-D2's shooting his fire extinguisher out of his eyes. No, Carmine, that's not how that works, but that's okay. But it's fun. And you mentioned a little Ethan Hunt. It's a little bit like Die Hard in space, really, as he's running around sort of the guts of the building sort of thing.
Absolutely. There's a lot of tone. Like, if you turned this into a short film or TV series, there's a lot of tones you could do with it. You could do a Die Hard tone.
Yeah.
You could definitely do it more like a Vincent Price haunted house thing. Like, you could make this legitimately scary. I mean, imagine that, dead bodies everywhere. You don't know what's going on, but everything in here is trying to kill you. It's got a neat tone and concept to it.
It's a lot of fun.
For sure.
Very high action. Lots and lots of high action. And that's what you want out of Star Wars, right?
Yeah. And like you said, first issue coming in after Empire. Yep. They're not skimping on action.
Not at all. Not a lot of sitting around talking about our feelings. So, All right, now jumping ahead, pages 15 through 20. So here we get your Admiral Krell. He's being evil. So with his scars full, you know, they got a great shot of him all in red with his scar just right there. Love that. Then Luke and R2 are going through the guts of the ship, and they finally find the probe droid. They find where the center of the ship, and this is the page that sings to my heart here. The probe droid is plugged in 9 different ways. It's got 9 different appendages attached to the computer. It's obviously got complete control of the ship. Again, fantastic lighting with blues and pinks and dark blues and all this. It looks awesome. I just can't get enough. And it looks scary, and it's intimidating, and Luke and R2 are about to poop their pants. They're so scared of this thing.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. What really sells that colorful, chunky probe is the panel before it, which is very minimal. It's like two color. It's very like they're finally peeking around the corner. And the only thing, as a comics creator, and I'm no Infantino, and I've never worked for Marvel outside of Trading Cards, but as a creator, I would have made that the last panel and made you flip.
Oh, right.
To the reveal of the big droid plugged in 9 ways from Sunday, looking like the, I'm going to speak to about 1.5% of your audience, looking like the old Sega Genesis with the 32X and Sega CD attachments all on at once and all the cables coming out. All right. I see you, that one guy that got that reference. Yes, it's a great panel. And again, tech. There's a reason there's two inkers on this book. There's a reason. My goodness.
I hadn't thought about that.
Killed it. This book, you know, once I've gotten into the art of making comics, when I look at this book, I go, these inkers, no slight to Infantino at all, but these inkers sold this, and Glennis. This is a great team effort book.
I'm there with you. I hadn't thought about the inking side of it until you shared all your knowledge on this, right there with you.
Oh, yeah. God. When I inked those Cold Lightning books for Van Plexico, which is all sci-fi space, by the time that team got into the caves and caverns of this one planet, I was so thankful. I was like, thank God, caves and caverns, no more tech. Oh, my. Anyway, you don't have to listen to my woes. Let's go on with the story.
All right. So Luke and R2, they run away from the probe droid. They realize if they blast the probe droid, they're going to blow up the ship. So they start going around trying to figure things out. And they realize that the ship is on a collision course with the fleet, and it's going to be charged with critical mass, and it's going to blow up the rebel fleet. So they're in trouble. They're brainstorming what to do. Then Luke says, he figures it out. He's like, I've got a way. And boy, that's a Carmine shot right there. Wow. Top of page 17, top left panel. That is a Carmine Luke or Leia face. They could be brother and sister. I see it now. Anyway. Luke decides he's going to, he literally goes just off to and starts smashing a machine. Goes, this can't stop me. Nothing's going to stop me. I'm Luke Skywalker, destroyer of the Death Star, the one who dueled Darth Vader and lived to tell about it. Now, as I read this, I'm like, wow, that's a hell of an ego boasting there, Luke. And I just thought it was typical Marvel overwritten dialogue, but it's actually part of his plan. What he's doing is he's telling the probe droid who he is because he knows Darth Vader wants Luke more than anything. And so once the probe droid realizes that Luke Skywalker's on board his ship, it actually stops its trajectory towards the Rebel fleet and turns around and starts heading for the Empire.
I like to think of like he had to put the accolades in there just in case there was a guy like Lucas J. Skywalker. You know, he lives on some other planet. Right. I don't want to get confused with that guy.
Yep. Yep. So we get some interesting stuff. You know, he does quote Yoda. He says, you know, Yoda says there is no try, the do or do not. And I mean to do. So the boy learned, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Good reference.
Then the probe droid, as we said, figures out it's Luke, knocks Luke out with a giant explosion. And then Luke develops a new force power we've never heard of before, where he maintains control over his life functions to appear to be in a coma so that the probe droid thinks that Luke's knocked out. But in actuality, he's like moving around really slowly, but he's using the force to keep his life signs super low. Not in the movies, that force power. Pretty brave, I think, of Archie Goodwin actually to create new force powers, and I kind of like it.
Yeah, I think somebody saw Master Ninja with Lee Van Cleef or any of those old ninja movies where the ninjas can slow their heart rate and like appear to be even dead if they want to, you know?
Right.
But yeah, but it's funny to laugh at, but you know, Lucas drew a lot of Jedi stuff from ninja and samurai lore, so it kind of makes sense. Yeah,
absolutely is. No, you're dead on. So then as we go through here, you know, Luke is knocked out. He wakes up and again, he destroys part of the system. It took me a long time to figure out what the hell he was doing here. So he knocks out part of the guidance system. The whole reason for this is just to escape. I thought he was diverting the ship, but no, the ship's already on its way to the Empire because they know they've got Luke Skywalker. All he does is like mess up the guidance system so they can get an escape pod. And then I got to mention here again, page 19, like the way Carmine draws R2-D2 is just insane. I'm sorry. He's supposed to be a round little cylinder, and this dude is just, I don't even know what that shape is, but it is huge and massive and not a round cylinder. So wide. I mean, just wide as your mama.
I see it. Okay. I was like, panels, it's right before he puts the saber down, right?
Yes. Yeah. Almost any panel with R2, quite frankly, really. Yeah. But.
Scale be damned. Yep. We're going to do what we're going to do.
Yeah.
One thing I like about that page, and I don't know if it's a Glennis thing or an Anchor thing or a Goodwin thing, they play with the background of space. They actually did it in the last panel of the page before too, where instead of the black with white stars that we're used to, they kind of jazz it up by using a blue with black fleck, like black ink fleck on it, which, you know, gives it a fresh feeling.
So I totally agree. I love the blue space with the black dots. I do. The part of me in my head makes me wonder, did like Shooter, you know, Jim Shooter tell the staff, like, we got to save on black ink. So no more of these full black.
I think black's the cheapest one.
Probably. But a full black page also, you know, sucks a lot of the ink out of there, throws the color registers off sometimes. So could have been practical, but it's beautiful the way it's done, though.
Yeah, good point. There might have been. It might be a lot. Yeah. You might be onto something from the technical side.
So, all right, Luke and R2 get out in the escape pod, which I had with my Tatooine playset as a kid. You always use that escape pod as a toy. Then the ship jumps into hyperspace and it heads back to the Star Destroyer with your Admiral, whatever his face is, Admiral Damon Krell.
Damon Krell.
And he's like, here we go. I'm getting Luke Skywalker. I'm going to be the bee's knees. The Emperor's going to love me. But what happens, Jared? What happens?
I'll tell you what happens after I guess I'm not going to shut up about the art of making comics. The lighting they use on him in these last few panels, he's so dark and so angry, and so the lighting on him is so good. But man, basically the ship that's been taken over the probe becomes just a missile. It just bam, right into the Krell Star Destroyer, kills everybody in a great look. I can't stop talking about how good this book looks. In a great looking panel, well drawn, well inked, well colored. It's such a great, like, you don't, one of the great signs of a great comic is, especially this last one, the last two pages especially, you don't have to read the words. You don't have to read the words. You can absolutely tell what's going on, and the facial expressions and the light, it's so good. It's so good. I'll let you weigh in on it.
Well, just that explosion's amazing. With the Star Destroyer, yes, shattering, looks like torn paper, you know, the red speed lines coming off of it, the clouds of smoke. It's just astonishing. It looks phenomenal. I mean, this is a little precursoring of what happened in The Last Jedi when they did the thing where the blockade runner smashed through a Star Destroyer or whatever, but it looks great. I love it. it's so exciting, and it's just absolutely a fantastic way to end the issue. I mean, it's pure hubris, right? I mean, how many times, I got to wonder, how many times do Imperial officers' hubris cause their own downfall, especially in these comics? I got to wonder, it's something that's going to be in the back of my head from now on.
I mean, it's a lot of bad guys. I mean, this is the whole reason Cobra's never beat Joe.
Yeah. You know?
It's always some it's always like some machination within. It's not just hubris, but it's always like Destro trying to outshine Cobra Commander, or Admiral Krell trying to outshine, you know, everybody else with his brilliant plan. Like, it's always like I'm not just my hubris, but my willingness to try to be the coolest guy in the bad guy club, right?
Yeah.
And this dude's going up against Darth Vader. There's no way cooler than Darth Vader. But I gotta say, of all the people that have tried, I gotta think Admiral Krell is one of the cooler bad guys. Hey, it didn't last long, all but one issue, but I liked him.
You're clearly in his corner.
I am. I think he's a great villain. He's got everything you want in a villain. Dark, lighting, a scar, a pretty good plan. Like, yeah. I like a villain that's not dumb. Like Cobra Commander's dumb most times, especially in the cartoon.
Sure.
But like a valid, good plan. Like, that's good stuff. That's Lex Luthor stuff right there. And that's why Luthor's a top-tier villain. And Dr. Doom's a top-tier villain.
I would agree. Well, as we're moving to the ending here, I one thing I'm going to try and do as I go through these is find the best R2-D2 sound. Noise that he makes throughout each issue. Here, I like, particularly, I liked Ditta Vreet Kawoop. I thought that was a pretty good one.
This was understated, but this is when Luke was knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
Dude.
Aww.
Just dude.
That's sad. I do like how they made his word balloons green in this one, which is, I don't remember them doing that. Like, 3PO's is always yellow. Like, that has always been kind of, as far as I can remember, 3PO's word balloons are always yellow. So to give R2 green ones, I thought that's pretty cool. I wonder if that continues. I have no memory whatsoever.
And shout out to the letterer. Because we've complimented everyone else on the creative team. He goes so far as to give it a robotic word bubble with a little squiggly line. I'm not good at describing things. Just look it up, folks. He's got a robotic word bubble, I assure you.
Shout out to John Costanza. Nice job.
Costanza.
So, all right. So here's a little thing I meant to mention earlier. So I am a bit biased on this. Maybe I should have said this up front. I told on a previous episode, again, not that Jared listened to it, that I started collecting Star Wars comics with issue 50. That was the moment I became a hardcore Star Wars comic collector. And very quickly after that, I pedaled my bike right back up to that convenience store, and I found the old issues that were still on the shelf at the local convenience store. That included Star Wars number 47 and Star Wars number 45, the issue we just covered. So this is one of my earliest issues of Star Wars as a comic collector. I read it, I reread it, I reread it, and reread it, and reread it. So a lot of these images are burned into my mind forever. So, Jared, all right, big picture here. You share your thoughts, I'll share mine. What did you think of this as an issue, as the follow-up to Empire Strikes Back, the first issue out of the gate, the art, all of this? What did you think?
One of the things I like best about it being the first post-Empire issue, we mentioned, it's hardcore action. It's Die Hard in space, if you will. And I like the fact that they didn't feel like they had to come out of the gate and check in on everybody.
Okay.
They were like, we've got time. Let's pace ourselves. Plus, there's a lot of questions going on about what's going on with Han Solo. I mean, he's
kind of cold. He's frozen.
Yeah, he's frozen. I mean, I contrary to what you may think from earlier, I did see the movie.
he's a Hansicle right now.
Yeah, so they're not messing with Han. They're not messing with Leia or Chewie or Lando. I think this is a great, if for nothing else, from the creative side, it's a time buyer. Like, we can buy a little time. We can tell a fun adventure story. Now you got me wondering about the lightsaber thing. Like, I feel like they had to. I feel like this conversation had taken place in Marvel, where they were like, listen, the lightsaber is Star Wars. You can't do Star Wars. It's like, it is the thing. It's like, oh, let's do a Thor story, but no hammer, you know, like.
Well, at this point, they probably just figured you could swing by like the Circle K and get another one. Like, what color you want, kid? You want red? You want blue?
But I honestly, if I had to guess, and I don't have paperwork to back this up, either they never even thought of it, or they were like, dude's got to have a lightsaber. It's right. Luke Skywalker at Star Wars. Just give him the lightsaber. No one's ever going to know. Or like, only the nerds are going to know. And let's be honest, the nerds want him to have a lightsaber too.
True.
So, yeah, I think post-Empire, this was good. Just enough touching base with the flashback scene and just enough of, hey, this is the comic universe, I think is a good combination of the two.
I like what you got there. I do. Yeah, for me, I'm a little torn a little bit as for the follow-up of Empire. Because, like, now, from a plot and script perspective, I think Archie Goodwin really did a great job. Like you said, action, action, action. And he reached into the action figure case, the one that's shaped like Darth Vader's head, and he played with a bunch of the new toys, right, from Empire. We got the Rebel Blockade Runner damaged in the Battle of Hoth, all right? We picked up on Hoth. The probe droid, or probot, from Empire, right? We get the flashbacks with Yoda and Vader, and the questions Luke's father. We get Luke using the Force in new ways that he learned in Empire. So he's playing with all the new toys. So that's a great pickup from Empire. But then is the art perspective. Like I said, I have one foot in the camp for Carmine and I have one foot out of the camp for Carmine. I appreciate what he did and all the stuff we talked about here. I do love this issue. But after six issues of Al Williamson with incredible photo reference, you know, beautiful art, it was probably just as jarring as Al Williamson's first issue, right? You go from Carmine to Al Williamson, which was very jarring. And I think it's probably kind of jarring going back. That said, there's something to be said for the dynamic Marvel bombastic style. I mean, that's one of the things Carmine did, is he looked at this and said, this isn't just Star Wars. This is a Marvel comic. And he made it as bombastic as he could. And it works. So again, I'm of two minds on it. And I think I agree with both sides.
I can see that. Absolutely. I love the fact that there is Star Wars comics that say I am a Marvel comic. Like it is very, even more so than they do with Indiana Jones, which is weird because Indiana Jones had a massive amount of different creative teams run
right
through.
Yeah, every 15 minutes.
Yeah, this one definitely was more steady, but it felt like they were more committed to making Star Wars part. This is a Marvel book.
Yeah,
you know, and it just feels that way. I like your take. I really do.
So I got a question for you. I'm going to ask my guests each episode is this, or was this, a Star Wars story? Because some issues, they're kind of pulling from other genres that they've adapted. I mean, there's going to be one where they straight up just adapt a different script. So do you feel like the story we got here, does it qualify as a Star Wars story, or is it something else?
I think it qualifies as a Star Wars story. It clearly has echoes of stuff. I mean, we mentioned like Die Hard, but it hasn't come out yet, you know.
Right.
But there's, you know what I'm saying? Even going back to World War II references, like infiltration, commando mission style stuff. So it definitely has a different tone than, although we do get a bit of infiltration commando stuff at the beginning of Jedi when they get to Jabba's Palace. So it's not out. Long story short, yeah, dude, it's a Star Wars story.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a better reference maybe would have been like Poseidon Adventure, right? Because, you know, you're going from danger to danger to danger and there's trouble along the way.
Was the ship ever upside down? I don't know. It's hard to tell.
I mean, in space, isn't everything upside down?
Yeah, maybe.
But yes, this was definitely a Star Wars adventure. It was bombastic. There was lightsabers. There was action, action, action. All the toys were played with. It really felt like a Star Wars story. Now, as we're going to move forward, folks, sadly, we are going to skip the letters page since we have our own feedback section. So that's our version of our letters page. And we're going to be skipping the ads in the interest of time. I know there are the amazing Hostess Fruit Pie ads in here. And quite frankly, this issue actually has my favorite Hostess Fruit Pie ad of all time, which is the Human Torch and the Lady with the Giant Hairdryer. I love it, but I'm committed to not making these shows even longer than they already are. So
is that one specifically for the cupcake, for the chocolate cupcake?
I can't remember which one it is. And I don't have the physical issue in front of me. I'm reading on the Marvel Unlimited app.
I'm using the Unlimited app too. Yeah. I got no ads and I got no letters.
Right. Well, I also brought my collection, my Dark Horse collection from the 90s, but that also doesn't have any ads. So either way. I just wasn't going to forget that Hostess ad because it was like my favorite.
I love it.
But now, Jared, we have the most difficult task of assigning the...
The Golden Pliff Award.
This is where we nominate our favorite moment from the issue, whether it's a story beat, something in the art, some aspect of Star Wars lore that's exciting, or whatever. Both myself and Jared are going to pick one moment each to spotlight, and those moments each will earn a Golden Pliff Award. And if you're unaware, the award is named for the single greatest Star Wars character of all time, Pliff the Hoojib. And you will hear much more about Pliff on future episodes. So, Jared, you are the guest, which has been rather unfortunate for me, but so you get to go first. What is your pick for your Golden Pliff Award?
It's just any moment I like, right? I just want to be clear on that. All right.
It could be the Hostess ad. I don't care.
So I only get one swing at this, or just one punch. I don't know if we still do one punch sound effects. We'll find out. I am going to go with, the end. I don't know if it's cheating to take two pages, but remember how I said those two pages, you don't even have to read them.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Admiral Prell and I loved his comeuppance. I love the shading and the look on his face. It's the, oh crap moment. It's this about to bite me in the butt. And then the explosion. So that climax for me is going to be it. If you pick the flashback page, you might could convince me, but I like that.
Well, the good news is this isn't a battle. So each one, because each one's going to walk away with the award here. So we don't have to convince each other.
I really should have prepared.
Maybe if you'd listened to the show once or something. Anyway, my pick is going to be page 2-3, which is a two-page spread. It's the reveal of the Imperial probe droid on the space station.
Two-page spread.
Yeah. On the ship, where again, with that lighting, again, I don't know why I'm so obsessed with the lighting, the pink and the blue. Like, I want to see, you know how they made those action figures that were based on the comics, like Darth Vader was painted like green and stuff like that, and pink eyes or whatever. I want to see this probe droid painted that way. I want that action figure. Anyway, that two-page spread with the reveal of the probot just mowing down people. It's terrible, but it's powerful. It's a great reveal. That is my pick for the Golden Pliff Award.
I love it. I think it's great, and I agree with you on the action figure. I actually have a Batman that's painted as he was in the Nintendo game.
Oh, nice.
So the sort of purpley blue version of him. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And I am on board with that. Yeah, I think especially artistically, we've picked the best moments.
I think so.
That's chock full of great stuff.
It really is.
This whole book is really well done.
So congratulations to the destruction of the Star Destroyer and congratulations to the probot murdering lots of people. You have both won the coveted Golden Pliff Award. So please display it with pride in a place of honor, perhaps atop your death probe. I don't know, something like that. Now, Jared, I need to ask a favor. I want to pull out all my old Empire Strikes Back Tops trading cards and play with the 9 pocket loaders. Really, it's just because I want to play with those probot cards. But do you mind hanging around here for a bit and cleaning up this horrendous mess left by the probe droid?
I'm on it. No, I'm on it. I got my space broom and space dust bin. I got nothing. Yeah, I'll take care of it.
That is a death probe to clean up after the death probe. It's almost poetic, folks.
Death probe on aisle, death probe.
Now, don't worry, Jared. We will bring you back at the end of the show. After this podcast promo break, I'm going to read your listener feedback in a segment called Star Words.
Hey, listen to Longbox Crusade.
Months only, Halloween hoedown at the House of Frankenstein.
Your favorite Halloween party returns with 4 brand new episodes featuring cinematic horror classics and horror-filled superhero tales starring Superman, Batman, and Spider-Man.
Pin the bandage on Boris Karloff as the mummy.
You will not remember what I show you now, and yet I shall awaken memories of love and crime. And death.
Do the locomotion with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing on the Horror Express.
Are you telling me that an ape that lived 2 million years ago got up to that crate, killed the baggage man, and put him in there?
Yes, I am. It's alive. It must be.
Bob for Apples with Hammer's The Reptile.
Get away from there! Get away!
Jam to the blues at this juke joint full of sinners.
We gonna kill every last one of you.
This September and October, join the Supermates at fireandwaterpodcast.com for the most happening haunt this side of the mausoleum, the House of Frankenstein. Halloween Hoedown!
Star Words.
Star Words is the segment of the show where we cover your feedback from the previous episode and is named for the letter column in these classic Marvel Star Wars comics. Now, on social media this past week, I did post a lot of things that we talked about in this episode, so be sure to check out Empire to Jedi social media from the past week. You can find us on most of the social media platforms as Empire to Jedi because, as I always say, it's about building a community of online Star Wars fans around the show. Now, first up, going to touch on some iTunes or Apple Podcast reviews. Now, if you haven't left a review yet, please consider it. It really helps raise the profile of the show and attract new listeners. And you can look on iTunes or Apple Podcast for Marvel Star Wars from Empire to Jedi. Now, if you're outside of the United States and you leave me an iTunes review, please let me know because I won't see those reviews unless I filter to the specific country. And as a thank you, I will read your entire iTunes Apple Podcast review on the air. Just like these folks. First off, thanks to Brett Young from Imagine8 Design and part of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. He has a show called Fantastic Pour. He writes, a wonderful look back. A fantastic look at the in-between stories sandwiched by Empire and Jedi that were anything but placeholders. This was my favorite period of the comics as the universe expanded with new characters and wild adventures. I have no doubt Shag will give these stories all the love. Give it a listen. Well, thank you, Brett. I appreciate that. Then we heard from Mark Baker Wright from Black Rock's Toy Box and Not Your Father's Autobot Podcast. Mark says, reminding us all that Star Wars is meant to be fun. He says there's tons of Star Wars podcasts out there. Indeed, there are quite a few that focus on the Marvel comics of the 1970s and 1980s. Why try another one? Well, the Irredeemable Shag comes at this project specifically looking at the period between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of Jedi with a mantra of find your joy. We all know that Star Wars fans can often be a source of negativity, causing one to wonder just how much they actually enjoy the franchise they purport to love. That won't happen here. Shag has many years of podcasting experience, and he knows how to focus on the things that bring people together. That's not to say that he's blind to faults. He'll point them out when he sees them, then he'll move on. Joined by an assortment of guests, the focus will always be on what makes this corner of the Star Wars franchise unique, worthy of examination, and above all, enjoyable. Want to enjoy Star Wars again? Come have a listen. Well, thank you, Mark. I mean, that's just like the mission statement of the whole show right there. Thank you very much. Then heard from Al Girding, who says, makes you feel young again. Making someone feel joy or feel young again is a true superpower. Or in this case, the force is strong with these podcasters. Well, thank you, Al. I appreciate that. And finally, we heard from Sean Ross, who's also part of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. He has a show called Peacebound and Down, a Wonder Woman podcast. And Sean is someone who has cracked the code of Shag and iTunes reviews. So here we go. Sean says, bring in the fun. Shag is bringing the joy to a great era of Marvel Star Wars comics from the 1980s. For so many of us, these comics are what kept our love of the Star Wars universe alive in the long wait between films. Having a show that dives back into them is a gift worthy of Life Day. Also, since Shag agrees to read every word of a review... Yes, Sean, I did agree to read every word of an iTunes review. Sean goes on to say, he now has to say this on an episode. B. Arthur is the best part of the holiday special. I love her more than Mara Jade. Well, thank you, Sean, for putting those words in my mouth. And if I said them, they must be true, I suppose. Well, again, thank you to everyone who has left an iTunes or Apple Podcast review. I sincerely appreciate it. Again, folks, just look for Marvel Star Wars from Empire to Jedi on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. It would be sincerely appreciated. And we'll read your review on the air. All right, getting into your feedback, I have collected all those comments you left from firewaterpodcast.com website and any emails, and I put them all in a Google Doc, and it's a lot. So I won't be reading every word, but I am going to make sure to acknowledge every single person that left a comment on our website and read a portion of their comment. Now, remember, if you want your thoughts read on a future episode, be sure to leave the comment on our website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com/empiretojedi. Now, these comments come specifically from our last episode, which was extra long, all about the Empire Strikes Back comic book adaptation with my guest, Andrew Leyland. First up is Ryan Daly, who is one of the hosts of Batman Nightcast and his own Cheerscast. He is also the host of a podcast which is currently on an extended hiatus called Gimme Those Star Wars here on the Firewater Podcast Network. So Ryan writes, fun discussion, fellas. I always enjoyed listening to Andy talk about Star Wars, so he was a great choice for the first guest of this podcast. Truthfully, I can only think of one other person who would have been a better choice, but oh well. Ryan is never going to let me live it down that he had a Star Wars podcast on our network first. Okay, gotcha, Ryan. Ryan goes on to say, I never read the comic adaptation of The Empire Strikes Back until I started dating my wife, Angela. She has the collected edition you talked about, the one that looks like a standard paperback novel you pick up in the store. I was fascinated to see how Marvel sliced up the comic pages and reassembled the panels into smaller scale format. Ange inherited her copy from her late uncle, and it's a prized sentimental possession, so it's currently on display in a place of prominence on the shelf. That's fantastic. That makes me very happy to hear, Ryan. He goes on to say, one of the first records I got when I turned hipster and started collecting vinyl a couple years ago was the Newbery Comics exclusive edition of the John Williams score to The Empire Strikes Back. The Imperial March has transcended Star Wars so much that it's become one of the most frequently played pieces of music by marching bands at football games and other sporting events. And how weird is that? But for me, Yoda's theme, sometimes referred to as the Force theme, and the familiar refrains used in every subsequent Star Wars movie, for me, is the most emotionally powerful piece. All right. Well, thank you for sharing, Ryan. Appreciate that. Next up, we heard from Brian Schufo, who says, for answers to who takes care of all the paperwork in the Empire, Google Dolores Imperial HR. She is a cosplayer who goes to conventions to, quote-unquote, write up HR violations. She posts a lot of them on YouTube and TikTok and Instagram, and a lot of other cosplayers are really into it, too. That sounds fantastic. So Dolores Imperial HR, I cannot wait to see that. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate that. Then we heard from Ido Bosner, who says, really enjoyed the conversation. I was still buying Marvel Star Wars comics at this point, and I snapped up the Empire adaptation as fast as I could. The one I ended up buying was the magazine edition you mentioned. I love the adaptation because, damn, you just can't beat great art by Williamson and Garzon. Like Shag, I really did not like Infantino's art on Star Wars. I thought he was a poor fit for the series, and this is why, even though I was a huge Star Wars fan at the time, I only sporadically picked up issues, usually when some story seemed really interesting. It's also why the Valent story in issue 16 made me for Walt Simonson to become the regular penciler. And he goes on to say, yes, the Empire adaptation also looks a lot better than the adaptation of the first movie in the first six issues. However, I would not go so far as to call it the best comics adaptation ever. Personally, I think that title goes to either Logan's Run, which, if I'm being honest, is better than the movie, much as I unironically love it, or Alien, the Illustrated Story, also by Archie Goodwin, and yes, the incomparable Simonson. By the way, when you guys were talking about the whole Dagobah part of the story, it reminded me of something that happened when I saw Empire for the first time back in 1981. During that scene where R2-D2 falls off the X-Wing into the foggy swamp muck, and Luke shouts, R2, where are you? Some little 7 or 8-year-old somewhere in the theater shouted, he's in the water, stupid! Of course, everyone lost it. That is a fantastic story, Ido. I appreciate you sharing. Siskoid from the Firewater Podcast Network, who runs shows such as Who's Editing, FW Team Up, and more, says, great first full episode. Can't go wrong with Andy Leyland. Well, you're right there, Siskoid. Then we heard from Movie Matt Sarois from the TV Movie Rewind Podcast. He says, great episode, gentlemen. I would have commented earlier, but I ran into a bounty hunter on Ord Mantell. Matt says, regarding the passage of time for Luke training with Yoda and Han and Leia's journey to Bespin, it's important to remember the Millennium Falcon couldn't make the jump to light speed. Therefore, it probably took weeks to make that trip. That would allow the time for Luke to have a couple of weeks of training. By the way, Matt, that also might explain why Han and Leia grew so close from their first smoochy smooch to being in love by the time it got to Bespin. It could have been a couple of weeks. That actually helps fit. Thank you. Then it goes on to say, Boba Fett's armor looks off because that's not Boba Fett. Fett was busy doing appearances at mall openings and didn't have time to pose for Al Williamson, so they sent Fenn Scheisse in his place. That's right, comic collectors. Pick up these issues because they're all the first appearance of Fenn Scheisse. Then he writes a disclaimer. All statements about Fenn being Fett are completely delusional and should not be taken seriously. Then he says, this was a great breakdown on the Empire adaptation. While I don't feel the Empire is the best movie of the original trilogy, I do feel it got the best adaptation. All right, Matt. Well, hey, just let me know in the comments next time, Matt. What was the best Star Wars movie, in your opinion, of the trilogy? For me, it's Empire. But I know a lot of people feel like the first movie is better or maybe critically more important, whatever. Would love to hear your thoughts. Then we heard from Rob Kelly, noted film historian and part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. He does shows such as Fade Out, and he's my partner on the Who's Who podcast. He says, enjoyed this generously length episode. I bought Star Wars from issue 1. It was my favorite Marvel series, and I never missed an issue. And I remember how jarring it was to have Empire suddenly dropped into the ongoing run of the book. I was so immersed in the Marvel continuity that the movie felt like an aberration. That is wild to think that someone would consider the Empire adaptation, you know, just disjointed with the rest of the Marvel comic. But I get it. If you're into the Marvel continuity, the art's completely different. Yeah, I can see that. And then Rob goes on to say, knowing as we do that George Lucas is such a Flash Gordon fan, I wonder if he got involved with who drew the Empire Strikes Back comics. I can imagine him thinking a lot of the regular Marvel artists were too off-model for his taste, but Williamson was just right. His stuff always looked classy. Yeah, Rob, I'm pretty sure I saw in some of my research that either Lucas specifically asked for Al Williamson, or he had a hand in suggesting maybe the Flash Gordon artist, something like that. I seem to recall reading where he did have some sort of hand in that. Then we heard from Tim Price from the Outcasters, Batman and the Outsiders podcast, the Huntress podcast, and more on the Right On Network. Now, folks, know at home that Tim is reading along with us, and he had never read this adaptation before. So Tim says, as a first-time reader of the adaptation, you and Andy did an excellent review and analysis. Well done. No notes. Then he says, a funny thing, I was experiencing some deja vu while reading the issues that took a few minutes to understand. I had read the prose novelization of Empire back in 1980. The best that I can recall is either borrowing it from a friend or the library for a long bus ride, maybe for a junior high school field trip, or maybe the band was heading out of state on a competition, but I had lots of time to read, and I know I still notice the differences between the film and the book to this day. But it's amazing how similar the comic is to the novel. Of course, they had to have the same source material before the movie was finished, but could the comics have worked off the novel as well, or vice versa, and not developed entirely independently? So many beats feel the same. Maybe someone who can check out the novel or remembers it better that has some insight. As for me, I don't feel like I finished reading the novel, but I have a clear mental pictures of Luke hanging from the antenna like in the comic, and I definitely never read it before. Then it closes with, this is going to be fun. Thanks for starting up the show, Shag, and showing the only thing more powerful than the Force is podcasting. Well, thank you, Tim. Then we heard from Gene Hendricks, voice actor. Gene says, I can see what you guys mean as far as Al Williamson's art makes it more appealing to a wider audience. Having reread the Treasure Edition over the past week, it certainly works really well as a standalone project. In general, this is the kind of adaptation that I really like. It's not exactly like the movie, but gives the reader, as you said, deleted alternate scenes. Luke having a back to mask? That's something worth driving your Corvette Winter over to see. I'm glad to see the Corvette Winter joke continues and lives on. Thank you, Gene. Then he says, and now that the preliminary round is out of the way, on to the main event of all original Star Wars comics. Yeah, let me know what you thought, Gene, of this particular original comic. Then we'll hear from Bucky749, the American Samurai, who has his own YouTube channel. He says, I think the Star Wars omnibus I have starts at issue 84 of the regular series and runs through issue 88, and then annual 3 and the Return of the Jedi, issue 1 through 4. So we'll definitely chime in on those stories. All right, Bucky, well, we look forward to hearing from you in the future. Then we heard from a new commenter, Rodney Trainham, and I'm sorry if I said your name wrong, Rodney, let me know. He says, I know that 2+ hours isn't going to be the usual length for the episodes of this series, but I really did enjoy listening to this episode twice for the length of time. I may have to give this episode a third listen since I pulled out my copy of Empire Strikes Back Marvel Super Special and put it on the ever-expanding immediate-to-read pile. Wow, Rodney. I am flattered that you took the time to listen to that episode twice. We put a lot of effort into it. To know that it was appreciated means the world. Thank you so much. Then Rodney says, for the longest time, I only had the first issue of the Marvel adaptation until 2 decades ago. I was able to find all 6 issues of the adaptation fairly affordably and well before the speculator market decided that issue number 42, the first Boba Fett, needed to be raised in value. By the way, I did a little research on that. That blows my mind. The Star Wars number 42 has gone insanely up in value because Boba Fett's first appearance. It makes no sense. He appeared in the collected editions, or like, you know, the treasuries and all that before issue 42 hit the stands. It makes no sense. That is a collective weird decision by speculators I don't get. Anyway, back to Rodney here. That was all my commentary. So Rodney says he got those issues at an affordable price, which is great. Then he says, I really fell in love with the Al Williamson, Carlos Garzon artwork, and with the Glynis Wynn colors. The art as a whole added to the mystique that I still have for the movie that I have had since I saw the movie and the many pieces of merchandise I saw or own supporting the film. Because of this adaptation and the merchandise like Topps cards, the action figures, the book and record set from Buena Vista Records, and the Thermos lunchbox, Empire became my favorite film of Star Wars franchise and is one of my all-time favorite films. Rodney, it's one of my all-time favorite films as well. So glad you're in good company, buddy. And he says, I look forward to the next episodes of the series and will now have to dig out the Dark Horse omnibuses so I can follow along with the discussion on upcoming issues. Thank goodness we're past the Carmen Infantino stories. Well, Rodney, we still have a couple more. Thank goodness we're past the Carmen Infantino stories since his artwork just seemed to be an odd fit for Star Wars. Great for The Flash and other superheroes, but not Luke Skywalker and definitely not Chewbacca. Well, Rodney, thank you so much for writing in. Really appreciate it and hope you enjoyed this episode as well. Then we heard from Brett M. Young, again from Imaginate Design and a member of the Firewater Podcast Network. He has a show called Fantastic Poor, or as the cool kids call it, The Poor. Brett says, great episodes, fellas. I had the individual issues of the Empire adaptation and sold the first appearance of Boba Fett, number 42, for $100 years ago. Man, I wish I had that back now. Selling it at such a low price is almost as bad as losing a bag of Star Wars figures. Oh, ba-dum-bum. Thank you so much, Brett, for rubbing salt in that wound. He goes on to say, the Williamson art is terrific. I love the way he depicts Chewie. His fur looks so soft and flowing, like he conditions it a lot. I was a little let down by his depiction of the Luke and Vader fight. He was missing some of the intensity of the duel, but he more than makes up with it everywhere else in the book. After you and Andy mentioned it, I went back and looked at the fill-in issue prior to the Empire adaptation by Michael Golden and Terry Austin. Oh man, that was amazing. Totally awesome, lively, fun art by them. Would have been nice to see those two get a long run on the series. Oh yeah, Michael Golden and Terry Austin on any kind of property in the 80s would have been amazing. So, well, thank you, Brett. Then we're from Jason R. Lady, author of the young adult humorous fantasy adventure novels Monster Problems, Super Problems, Time Problems, and The Pure Shore Club. Jason says, I had a blast listening to this podcast, guys. Well done. Love the analysis of this comic adaptation versus the movie. A strength of the comic adaptation versus the movie is that the comic actually showed Luke getting lightsaber training on Dagobah. If you're going just off the movie, you can be perplexed how Luke can possibly last in a duel with Darth Vader as long as he does. The lightsaber training is completely implied. I never thought about that, Jason. That's a great point. You never see Luke practice with a lightsaber doing real hardcore lightsaber training in the movie. Huh. And he says, you guys talked about the miscolored Boba Fett, but what about the miscolored Forlom? He's purple in the comic, and poor Zuckuss is only barely seen on the splash page of issue 42. Boy, Kenner mixes up their names, and also this happens? Those two guys get no respect. Then Jason says, interesting that issue 42 depicts the hologram of the Emperor as a shadowy wraith and no more. Obviously, the comics were not privy to what the Emperor was going to look like and left it vague. That makes sense, yeah, because those the hologram thing would have probably been filmed after the fact as not part of the stills that they had privy to. Yeah, good call. And he says, not showing the space slug is pretty similar to how the Return of the Jedi adaptation doesn't show Vader's unmasked face. All right. And he says, also, take a look at how Williamson draws Slave One in flight. It's apparent no one at Lucasfilm explained to Marvel how that ship is oriented in flight. In all fairness, we take it for granted, and it's pretty weird how it flies and lands. All right, well, I think I'm going to have to go back and look at the way Al Williamson drew Slave One in flight. That'll be interesting to see. Thanks for the tip. Then we heard from Symbol Pending, who has a Power Girl blog called Symbol Pending. They say, being more of a lore kind of person, I always find people who really know their stuff to be fascinating, and Andy is always an excellent choice as a guest every time. Not going to get an argument out of me, Symbol Pending. Symbol Pending continues on, I'm one of those who think that I might have seen Empire in the cinema, though I might be an older me, as memories of a 7-year-old are a bit on thin ground. I see what you're saying. You think you may have seen it, but you're not entirely sure. I'm a little bit that way with the first Star Wars. I'm a little shaky on whether I saw it in 77 or 78, maybe even as late as 80. I don't know 100% sure. I feel like I did, right? But I don't know for sure. Then we're from Brian Linton, who says, I didn't get into Star Wars comics until the Dark Horse era, so I'm really enjoying this look at the earlier Marvel comics. When it comes to expanded universe characters, my favorite is probably Kyle Katarn from the Dark Forces video game series. As much as I enjoyed those games, I was thrilled when Kyle popped up in the New Jedi Order novels, because that truly made him part of the expanded universe, in my mind at least. Thanks for another remarkable episode. I look forward to the next one. Well, thank you, Brian. I appreciate that. And hey, I think Kyle Katarn is as valid as any other expanded universe character and deserved to be recognized as well. So, all right. Now, folks, this is the part of the show where I thank everyone who shared our show on their social media timeline. That's Facebook, X or Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. It is a long list of names. I know that. However, these folks showed their support and promoted the show, so it's important to me that we recognize these individuals. This time out, we got over 60 different people who helped promote the last episode of the show. Now, you could be on this list next episode. It's very easy. Just by sharing or retweeting or whatever the heck it's called on each of the platforms. Again, Facebook, X or Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, or Threads. You can look for Empire to Jedi, or you can even look for the Firewater Podcast Network, either one of those. So, all right, here we go. Our thanks to Al Girding, Alan Boyce Jr., Between the Pages Blog, Bill Beer, Billy D, Black Vulcan 69, Brian Schufo, Chris Franklin, Chris Mort, Chris Worms, Chuck Rodriguez, Clinton Robison, Dan Dougherty, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, David Ace Gutierrez, Ed Moore, Hodag RPG, Imaginate Design, J. David Weeder, Jeff Poyer, JLA, Stories and Friends, John Stibe, Keechee Baker, Connell, M.A. Salko, Magazines and Monsters, Mark Baker Wright, Michael Kramer, Mike Jameson, Mike Tarkin, Movie Matt Sarois, Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast, Patrick's Tactics and Tutorials, Paul Kean, Plo Cool 811, Pop Culture Basement, Resurrections, an Adam Warlock and Thanos podcast, Rob Kelly, Roger Preeb, Rolled Spine Podcasts, Ryan Daly, Scott X, Sean Quinn, Sleazebag Cinema, Steve Givens, Stephen E. Shend, The Star Wars Splash Page Podcast, Symbol Pending, Teal Productions, The Only American Captain Britain Fan, Tim Price, Venkman, Wallace at Tiller A. Nelly, Zeb Oswald, and Zek Cap Boots. Whew. My thanks to all of you for your support of the Empire to Jedi podcast. I truly believe that listener feedback is a critical part of the show, and this community of Star Wars fans we're building together is absolutely fantastic. Now, if I've forgotten or missed anyone, I am terribly sorry. It is probably the fault of Andy Leyland. I do my best to find all the social media comments, but sometimes they do slip through my internet fingers. So please keep those cards and letters coming, folks. The best place, again, is our website, which is firewaterpodcast.com/Empire to Jedi. Leave your comments on the show post, and fellow Star Wars fans can share thoughts with you, and you communicate together, and they will get read on the air. Speaking of interacting with listeners, you can also find us on social media, on several other platforms, again, as Empire to Jedi. Again, that's Facebook, X or Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads. You can also email us at empiretojedi@gmail.com. My thanks again to you listeners for such a great collection of feedback. Now, we're going to take a quick podcast promo break, and when we come back, we'll see how this episode's guest, Jared Ulrich, the Artel artist, did cleaning up after the Probot.
Batman Nightcast is back with new episodes every month.
This time, we're covering the Dark Knight stories we overlooked in previous iterations of this show.
Anyway, I'm Chris Franklin.
And I'm Ryan Daly.
Join us as we find our joy with Batman Comics chronicling the Caped Crusader's first adventures with the Boy Wonder.
Thrill as we review the fiendish plots of a who's who of villains, like Poison Ivy, Killer Croc, Gentleman Ghost, and Clayface 3.
If this is a bit, I don't understand it.
Hey kids, comics by legendary creators Don Newton, Neil Adams, Marshall Rogers, and Bill Sienkiewicz.
Plus, the single greatest Batman story ever told.
It all comes back to Batman Nightcast.
I don't know what's happening right now.
New episodes every month.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Wanna make something of it?
Did you fall on your head?
It's the year 1992, and the Justice Society of America, the world's first superhero team, make a triumphant return after 6 years trapped in another dimension. Finally home, the JSA find themselves relics in a world that has moved on. It's the age of pulse-pounding action, where the rules of fair play are tossed aside for gritty violence. Our heroes ask themselves, does the world still need a Justice Society? Oh, yes, it does. Join me, the irredeemable Shag, for JSA in the 90s. We'll delve into the 10-issue Justice Society of America ongoing series, drawn by the iconic Mike Parabek. We'll explore the 8-issue retroactive miniseries and unearth hidden gems from the era. Join us for JSA in the 90s, available as part of the Justice Society Presents podcast feed. Okay, folks, we're back from break, and yes, we've got Jared back with us. Now, Jared, a.k.a. Death Probe, my thanks to you for appearing in this episode. I really appreciate it, buddy. It's always a blast to chat with you, and this just seemed like the perfect issue to have you. Why don't you tell the listeners where they can find more of you on the internets if they didn't happen to catch one of your 5,000 plugs so far?
I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, if you want to chat with me personally, I am at Yard Sale Artist on X, Facebook, and Instagram. It is all at Yard Sale Artist. My podcast stuff is on the Long Box Crusade Network, where we'd love for you to check out any of our myriad of shows. And we also dabble on the On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast Network if you like some James Bond. I appreciate you having me on here. I'm sorry if things were a bit haphazard. I am literally leaving for Dragon Con tomorrow. I never should have booked this. I did read the comic. I did read the script. Unfortunately, both of those things were like a couple weeks ago. So hopefully this comes out okay for you. And one of these days, I will listen to one of your shows.
Well, I'm sure me and all the people that guest on the show appreciate that your efforts to maybe one day accidentally listen to this when you download the wrong show.
Yeah, but I think the odds dictate that at some point I'll accidentally listen.
Like, I could have sworn I downloaded Rob's Super Friend show. What the hell is this?
What is this?
Well, thank you, Jared. I really appreciate it, buddy. It's always great to catch up with you. So that's going to do it, folks. Come back in 2 months for our next episode when we cover Marvel Star Wars number 46. And I'll be joined by a fantastic guest to help me cover the issue. Who will it be? Come on, people. You know how this works. You're just going to have to wait and find out next episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, I'm Shag.
And I'm Jared. And may the Force be with you.
Always.